Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, I'd like to welcome you, dear viewers, to this segment of our program, Contemporary Issues. And in this segment, we'll continue to look at some advancements in modern science and its implications and the Islamic position with regards to them. In the previous segment, we looked at something of cloning. In this segment, we're looking at something related to it, that is what they call test tube babies, or artificial insemination, where they will take the egg, the ovum from a woman, and the sperm cell from a man, and put them together in a test tube, well, actually it's in petri dishes, and from that they will grow a fetus and then put it back in the woman's womb, and the child comes. This is being done mainly for men or women who are infertile, you know, for one reason or another. They've been doing this for some years now. Of course, when it was first done, you know, it was like, it was put in the newspaper as, you know, test tube babies. That's what this was called then. And people got the idea that, hey, they were actually, you know, making up kids inside of test tubes and growing them up there, you know. But of course, this is a gross exaggeration of the facts. The fact is, as we said, they're extracting ovum and sperm from a male, living male and female, and putting them in a petri dish, letting them in an environment which is similar to that of the womb so that they can unite. And they start to divide. Once they start to divide, then they take them and put them back in a female, and the baby is grown to term. That's the actual process. Now, they've tried to continue that process outside, but they found that the eggs, they will divide and divide for a while, then they go haywire. They cannot sustain that development outside of the womb. So it has to go back in. And in the beginning, they have to start with an ovum and a sperm. They're not taking random chemicals. You know, you go to the chemical shop, you know, you go to, and you buy these chemicals, which are what a sperm is made of. They're definite chemicals. What its components are, it's known. You can buy them. And what an ovum is made of, these chemical components are known. You can buy them. But they're not doing that. They're not taking these chemicals and these chemicals, dropping them into test tubes, stirring them all around, and then all of a sudden you're getting a baby. No. They're nowhere near that, and they will never achieve it. As Allah said, if the whole of the humankind and the jinn got together to create a fly, something which is so despicable, we kill them all the time, spray them and everything else, they're nasty, the fly. If the whole of humankind got together along with the world of the jinn, call the jinn the aliens, right? Get the whole of the universe together. They could not even create a fly. That is, get those chemicals, mix them all together, and out pops a fly. No way. They can never do it. Why? Because we cannot create life from inanimate matter. See, modern science thinks that life is a product of matter, meaning that once you get these molecules and atoms and DNA, RNA, cell walls, and you got this all together, got all these pieces together. Life is a product of that process. They don't look at life as being something external which has been added to it. The reality is that's what it is. It is external. It is not a product of matter. Matter is created, and life is created by God. So whatever they do, of living things, they can only use other living things to do it. They cannot use inanimate matter to create life or to manipulate it so that they end up with a living anything. They're not able to do this. And they will never be able to do this. This is God's promise. So human beings, they can try all they want. You know, it is a waste of their time, their energy, and their monies. They will never be able to create life. So, back to our test tube baby, so-called test tube baby. Now, what does Islam say about this? Well, basically, Islam permits one format, one way. A man and a woman, man and his wife, they're unable to have children for one reason or another. So you combine the ovum from that woman, the sperm from the man. Your product, you put back into the ovum of that same woman. She gives birth to her child, That is permissible. Islamically, that is permissible. That is only helping them to produce children. Now, all of the other versions that are out there, because right now you have mothers bearing the children of their daughters. A woman, she can't deliver the child herself. So after combining the sperm of her husband along with her sperm, the resulting product, they can't put it back in her womb because for whatever reason, maybe they've taken out her womb or whatever, you know, she can't have the child. So they're taking the child and putting the child in her mother's womb or her sister's womb or her best friend's womb, you know, or her daughter's womb. We have all of these different pictures. They've done these things now. All of those are forbidden in Islam. Forbidden. Because you've got a genealogical bomb, maze, confusion here. A mother giving birth to a child who belongs to her daughter. But that child is, in fact, if she's mother gives birth, that child is the woman's sister, not her daughter. So you see, you've got all kinds of ethical problems that come here, because the point is that the process, though the child is growing within the womb, separate from the woman in the sense that, you know, as we pointed out, issues of abortion, why we were opposed to it before, separate from the mother, blood not mixing with that of the mother's, but still the child is under the influence. There are influences, you know, in growing in within that womb. There are influences that perhaps we don't recognize them now. Later on, you know, 10 years from now or whatever, they will recognize some things that are coming from that mother into that child, which makes that child linked to the mother in a unique way. These things, you know, this whole process now destroys the proper genealogy if we are putting these ovum into other women. Now, there's another format too, which is also absurd and unacceptable Islamically, and that is the man, for example, the man and his wife. And this is very common today. That's why you have sperm banks and ovum banks, things. A man and his wife. The man, he has a low sperm count. His sperm just cannot fertilize the egg of his wife. So they go to a sperm bank and they get somebody else's sperm. And they fertilize his wife's thing and grows a child. Hey, this child is not the man's child. This is the child whose father now is unknown. This is an illegitimate child. This is, if relative to the woman, some form of adultery, producing an illegitimate child. Similarly, you have the other scene where the woman, for whatever reason, she can't produce ovum. So you go and get ovum from another woman, along with her husband's sperm, and then put it in that woman's womb, and she gives birth to the child, calling it her child. But it's not her child, really. It's got the ovum from somebody else. I mean, maybe from the point of view of it coming out of her own, you know, she's delivering the child, so you could say, okay, it's her child from that perspective, but in terms of its origin, its essence, it's not her child, you know? And this is a child out of wedlock. And what you even find now is that you have homosexuals, males, okay, they can't have children if they marry, and you have them marrying today. There was a big case in England of two rich homosexuals who, what they did was they found women to bear their children, right? They impregnated, without sexual relations, they impregnated women, they bore the child, and now the two men are going to raise these children as their own. You know, this is absurd, unacceptable Islamically. Or two lesbians, for example, female homosexuals. Of course, by themselves, they cannot produce any children. So they go to the sperm bank, they buy some sperm, you know, have it inserted in themselves, they get pregnant, so they're having children. This is madness. This is going beyond the people of Lot and only inviting the destruction of God and their society. So These are unacceptable formats, as we said. In summary, the only acceptable format is a husband, his wife, the husband's sperm, the ovum of the wife, being put in the womb of the wife and delivered by that wife. That's the only acceptable format. All of the others are rejected by Islam, from the confusion of genealogy that can come, and also the corruption that is promoted through homosexual couples being able to have children and raise those children as their own. The second area which we'd like to look at, you know, related to this, is that of sex change operations, you know, which is also a means now of homosexuals, you know, whether it's male or female. They feel, you know, as they like to say, you know, man claims, I'm a woman, you know, trapped in a man's body, or a woman claiming, I'm a man trapped in a woman's body. So medical science change us into what we are not. So you find a man who spent all his life as a man, all of a sudden he goes in, has these operations, and then they load him up with hormones, etc., so he can grow breasts and things like this, and he's now living the life of a woman, and vice versa. This, from an Islamic perspective, is totally unacceptable. No way can we accept this at all. Now, this, in fact, is part of Satan's trickery, as mentioned in the Quran, where Allah said, quoted Satan as saying, "Indeed, I will take my share of your servants by leading them astray and filling them with vain desires. And I will instruct them, and they will cut pieces of the ears of cattle, and they will change Allah's creation." This is what people are trying to do today. This kind of surgery is totally unacceptable. However, where we have cases of hermaphrodites, people who are born having both male and female sexual parts, but one is dominant, for them to remove the other, close off the orifices or whatever, and that person can live a complete life as that one dominant feature, this is something acceptable. This is correcting something which, you know, you could say a birth defect, correcting it. And Islam doesn't really have any problem with that. You know, just as a cosmetic surgery in general, because this could be called a form of cosmetic surgery, this kind of operations, they're acceptable Islamically. A person is born with a defective ear, you know, a cleft palate, you know, hair, lip, you know, a variety of different things. You know, a person in accident, burnt, or nose is broken, or things, body parts damaged, etc., for them to use the skills of modern surgery to try to repair the damage which has been done, no harm. However, where people are involved in trying to actually change themselves, you know, they don't like how they look, they feel their lips are too thin or they're too thick, their nose is too pointed or it's too flat, they feel their eyes are this way or that way, you know, their cheekbones are too low, they want it higher, you know, they want a split in the cleft in their chin, or they want dimples in their cheeks, or, you know, right, these kind of operations, which they're calling them cosmetic surgery now, you know, and they go on to even the rest of the body, they want to mold the body this way and that way to look like the latest styles and, you know, to fit modern definitions of beauty. This type of procedure is, from an Islamic perspective, rejected and forbidden. Prophet Muhammad even prohibited the plucking of eyebrows, tribal scarring, tattooing, and the artificial spacing of teeth. You know, these were the ancient methods of cosmetic surgery which people used to do. And this has been forbidden by the Prophet Muhammad in no uncertain terms, that Allah curses those who do this. So, with the desire to change, people are not happy with what Allah has given them, they don't like the way they look, they want to make this change. From this perspective, this is unacceptable Islamically. Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam had said, when we look at ourselves in the mirror, we say, O Allah, as you have made me in the best form, you've made my form good, make my character good. You know, this is what we are supposed to do. When we see ourselves, we accept this the way Allah has made us here. You know, this is good for us. So, the issues of cosmetic surgery, we said, where it is involving repair of damage, etc., which has been done, birth defects, etc., this is legitimate Islamically. But where it involves just being unhappy with the way one looks, one wants to look like this person or look like that person, you know, change this and change that, this kind of procedures, Islamically is just unacceptable. The other area which is related to this, in areas of surgery, is that of organ donation. The idea of taking organs from one person to another, or even from animals to humans, because the popular thing right now is taking some organs from the heart, some portions from the heart, specifically the heart valves, and putting them from the pig, putting them in human beings, because they found that pig heart valves are, you know, are most suited, are quite similar to the human heart valve, and it works, functions quite effectively well. You know, there's less chance of rejection, these type, body rejection, these type of things. And of course, this creates some ethical problems for Muslims, especially because when you consider the pig, you know, we're not allowed to eat it, it's forbidden, we can't buy it and sell it, etc. So how then can we take a piece of it and put it in our heart? Well, from the Islamic perspective, when life is threatened, when life and limb is threatened, then we are permitted to eat the dead, to eat what we cannot normally eat. If we're plane crashes on the desert, we have nothing to eat, I mean, you find a wild pig, you eat it, you know? Or even if, you know, a person who is with you on the plane, they died next to you and you're starving to death, you're allowed to eat a piece of them. But of course, you only eat what is enough to keep yourself alive. Meaning, maybe you cut off a finger or two and you eat them. And it doesn't mean that, you know, because you eat them and they taste good, you didn't think it would taste good, then all of a sudden you're cutting off an arm or a leg and you're starting to roast it all up and everything. No. You stop with what is absolutely necessary. Just same thing with alcohol. For example, you're starving to death, you know, you can't, nothing to drink, the plane crashed, the only thing that's available you find in the cargo is some alcohol. You drink from it enough to keep you alive. This is a basic principle from Islamic law, which makes this permissible. So if we can eat human body parts, if we can eat the pig, drink alcohol in these circumstances, then surely to take organs from the pig to keep ourselves alive, or organs from another dead human being to keep ourselves alive, is permissible. We can't kill a human being to get their organs. No, it's not permissible. But if a person has died already, to take their organs and utilize it to keep another person alive, this is a legitimate process according to Islamic law. With that, dear viewers, I'd like to thank you for looking at these issues along with us. We hope that, you know, these have enlightened you to some degree as to, you know, how Islam functions, quite reasonable, looks at the key issues with regards to these new scientific practices, and takes a position. You know, it doesn't stand back to say, well, we just don't know. No. Islam, there's guidance in every procedure, every process, every new development which comes. Islam has a ruling which is applicable to it, because Islam is the way of life which God provided for human beings to guide them in all aspects of their lives. So nothing remains without some form of guidance to show us the way. With that, dear viewers, I'd like to thank you for being with us and hope that you will continue to follow our program in the future. And we bid you farewell, welcoming also at the same time your suggestions, which you can write into us at P.O. Box 111, Sharjah Television, Sharjah, UAE. To me, of course, Dr. Bilal Phillips. And we'll see you in the next program. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.